we're so early on in legalization. There's definitely stigma that surrounds cannabis. And so finding those landlords, working with them, helping them understand who we are, what we stand for in terms of social responsibility, and look and how we are going to participate as being a community member is really important to us.
Hello and welcome to a podcast presentation of The Yards, Winter 2018 issue launch and salon, recorded live in the panoramic rooftop patio and lounge of the Hendrix Apartments on Thursday, December 6th. The Yards is a hyper-local quarterly magazine focused on urban, cultural, and social issues in central Edmonton, published by a nonprofit society in partnership with the Downtown and Oliver Community Leagues. I'm Jeff Samsonow, publisher of Edmonton Quotient, an online magazine partnering with The Yards to bring you this conversation. The winter issue of The Yards is the fourth annual Best in the Core, which highlights some of the best places in downtown and Oliver to grab a coffee, enjoy a night out, and explore the neighborhoods like a local. These are the neighbor favorites. Pick up a copy of The Yards at all kinds of locations in the downtown and Oliver. Check out a listing of those places at theyardsyeg.ca. You can also find the latest from the magazine at that website, theyardsyeg.ca. If you live in one of the neighborhoods, you probably already received your copy by mail. One article in the issue looks at something that everyone in Canada is talking about, cannabis legalization. It's a big issue in our busy core neighborhoods because this is where a lot of Edmonton's initial business applications are, thanks to our retail-heavy main streets. Now, as federally licensed producers start to get more and more cannabis over to the AGLC, Alberta Gaming, Liquor and Cannabis, we're going to see more of these stores start to open and maybe some more appeals over where they can locate. It is a lot of big, big changes. To talk about some of those developments and challenges, Yards publisher Simon Yakuluk brought together a panel of experts. They are Chris Vizey, president of the Downtown Edmonton Community League, Isaac Watson, VP of Product Development and Retail Experience at Fire and Flower, an Edmonton cannabis company expanding nationally, Sarah Davis, associate at Witten LLP, specializing in condominium law, John Frame, partner at Witten LLP, who focuses on condominium management law. Both lawyers have been working with multifamily housing owners and corporations as they adjust to the new laws, another issue that will have a lot of interest in our densifying core neighborhoods. All right, that's enough for me. Now let's jump right into the conversation.
So to open the conversation, I'd like to speak with Fire and Flower here about some of the challenges and opportunities you faced in setting up shop in the core. I know currently there's two Fire and Flower locations. There's one in Jasper Ave and one, I believe, Rice Howard Way that you're looking at. And I wanted to kind of begin the discussion by talking about what it means when you're setting these up in the core, what specific zoning you had to look into, and what sort of opportunities you saw with setting up these shops.
Hello, everyone. So I'll talk about Rice Howard Way to start. We just went through an appeal process and just came through and won that appeal in the last little while, looking for a small variance. It was, I think, about 3%. There's some sensitive use, obviously, with the Edmonton Public Library. So that came through. Now, when we're looking to kind of pick a location like Rice Howard Way, I think we're so early on in legalization. There's definitely stigma that surrounds cannabis. And so finding those landlords, working with them, helping them understand who we are, what we stand for in terms of social responsibility, and look and how we are going to participate as being a community member is really important to us. For some of you that live in this area, you'll have seen our signs or our window graphics on our Jasper Avenue location, which is located on 115th. That is still under appeal, so we're still in that process, and that kind of continues on. So it's been interesting. It's been a bit of a learning curve, I think, for ourselves, for the city. There's been some changing regulations and bylaw that's kind of continued to evolve over time. So I think it's a learning process. We're not all quite there yet. But, you know, for us, we're all very happy to be in the core. We perceive that there is quite a demand. There's probably the opportunity for more than just us to be here. And so that's kind of where we are today.
I want to talk to Sarah and John. Oliver and Downtown are perhaps unique in Edmonton for how many multifamily housing options that people really have to live in. What we mean by that is apartments and condos. The Hendricks is one example of that. What are some of the unique challenges and opportunities that multifamily properties do face with legalization that perhaps people have come to you with?
So I would say the majority of our clients are property managers and condo corporations. And for the most part, the concerns they've had with the legalization of cannabis have to do with odor and growing cannabis, which of course can potentially lead to mold growth, an increase in utility costs, and then of course the general fire hazard of having another substance that potentially could be extinguished or put out in a planter. Of course, there was the recent condo in Edmonton that unfortunately burned down because someone was using a cigarette improperly. And so our clients have been coming to us mainly asking for a total ban on all smoking, all vaping, and all growing of cannabis. And some have actually also used that as an opportunity to amend their condo bylaws to also ban smoking and vaping of any substance whatsoever, including tobacco.
Thank you. I guess I'd like to ask you, Chris, with the Downtown Community League, what policies has Downtown taken in regards to legalization?
Yeah. So when we were first consulted about this, you know, the city was looking for feedback. The most contentious thing was where you have mixed use. So you have commercial uses in a residential building. The city took the approach that for most zones, it's a permitted use. Cannabis sales, nobody's smoking it on site or anything like that. When we thought about the urban warehouse area or the heritage area, which is 104th Street, which are mixed use, the issue for us really was walkability. And because there is no smoking or vaping on site, it was really a matter of having retail locations that people could actually walk to and not have to drive to. So we were supportive of cannabis sales in most of the zones downtown. That was kind of our approach.
Is there anything with legalization so far that you think the city still needs to catch up on in terms of zoning?
I think the challenge is going to be ahead of us when they start talking about lounges and cafes, which is, I think, a one-year moratorium or so. And there's actually a lot of places downtown where there's not very many places downtown that you can have a cannabis a sales shop. Cannabis sales retail because of the separation distances from parks and schools, libraries, and that kind of stuff. For instance, on 4th Street, there's pretty much no location that you can have a separation. And I think it's the city did that for a variety of reasons. They were worried that there would be like dozens of applications on White Avenue. And that's part of the reason for the separation distance between stores and the approach. But that may or may not work for downtown. So I could see council revisiting this in a couple years and seeing kind of, okay, who was able to set up. Currently, there is only two approved shops downtown. One is Fire and Flower, which they had to go through the Subdivision Development Appeal Board to get that. I actually, disclosure, sit on the Subdivision Development Appeal Board, but I never sit on Downtown Appeals. So I've had a firsthand experience dealing with cannabis sales appeals across the city, and it's been really interesting and also challenging at times because there is no precedent for a lot of the decisions we're making. Not that SDAB necessarily looks at precedent, but it's just been a really, really interesting time to be on that panel, and then also to see kind of like, you know, where it may or may not be able to set up downtown.
Thanks, Chris. Same question. Repeat the question. So, especially with Fire and Flower going through this process of getting your new stores going, are there things that obviously this is unprecedented with the city dealing with legalization? what do you think they should be changing that hasn't worked out in the last, you know, 2 months?
I think for us at the onset, we would have been in favor of the city looking at applicants who actually had gone through the diligence with the AGLC. So that wasn't a requirement to go through city permitting, which meant that there was a lot of additional applications. And since the city chose to go through an email approach lottery system, it meant that there was a bit of noise in that mix for people that received approval from the city, but hadn't gone through the steps with the province, which is much, much more rigorous. The other thing I would say for ourselves is, I mean, we're all from Edmonton, right? This is an Edmonton-based company. We live in these communities. I know for like our White Avenue location, we're constructing the building to try and be less obtrusive to the community that is behind us. So we're trying to augment the community. We're looking to try and give back, to invest, to figure out a way of how do we daylight this kind of, it's a big social norm. There's a lot of people that consume cannabis over the course of the year. And how do we do this in the right way? Generally, though, I would say that the city has worked with us. We've appreciated the process. We've really enjoyed working with the communities where we're opening sites. But I think that the initial intake was probably where we have probably most of our feedback resides for the city.
I think the question, and how I'd frame it with you guys, what have your clients run into that you think the city could have made smoother in dealing with condominiums, which you're saying are your major clients here? What clarity could they add to the process?
So when you talk about the city per se, I'm not sure that the city could have done anything. The Condominium Property Act is a provincial statute, and it really governs and guides how condominiums are operated in this province. There's been a lot of, there are some recent amendments that have been made or put into place to that act that have been put into place over the last number of months, none which specifically deal with the cannabis issue. When you talk about challenges, what Sarah talked about is we've been approached by clients who wish to discuss how do we implement policies to deal with people who are smoking cannabis, growing cannabis, that sort of thing. And in certain respects, that expands to smoking in general. I think the challenge, one of the bigger challenges that I anticipate seeing is even if you put those types of prohibitions in place and bylaws, is enforcing those. So what do condominiums do to enforce their bylaws if someone's breaching them? Well, they can fine people, they can take steps in court to have them stop, that sort of thing. What I anticipate being troublesome with cannabis is, and it's obviously not going to relate to ingestion of oils and that sort of thing, but in terms of smoking and the odor. And how do we identify when people get behind their four walls and their door where the odor's coming from and who's smoking? Because ultimately, if we're going to take steps and try to remove people from a condominium as a tenant or fine them, and if someone says it wasn't me, it's going to be very difficult to prove that they're behind those four walls smoking. And that's what I anticipate. I mean, I've had a few instances before it became legal and where people would be smoking, and often you'd attack those problems under the nuisance provisions in the condominium, and that you can't create a nuisance, and that could be any kind, noise, music, and the smell was the one thing. And the difficulty we always had when someone fought it is, you go to court, you have to have evidence to prove that someone was doing something, and if they're going to deny it, to be able to prove that was the person and the smoke was coming from that unit. I don't know where that's going to go, and that's always going to be tricky. But so we can put as many rules in place, but there should be rules. And I think it's to let people know that this isn't allowed or allowed on the balcony only, that sort of thing. But that's what I see is going to be a tricky one to deal with. And I don't know where that's going to go or whether there's going to be an increase in that type of complaint from owners. I suspect there might be, but who knows? But that would be one of the biggest challenges I see in terms of enforcement of that type of bylaw.
I'd like to open it up to the floor a little bit. If anyone has some questions for our panel, I think we have a lot of different perspectives on how cannabis can relate to the core. If someone has any questions, I'd invite you to come up.
Right there. Okay, so thus far, the conversation today has kind of focused on retail sales of dried flower. But my question is, Within the next coming 12 months or so, we'll be seeing edibles being legalized. And anybody who's familiar with the cannabis industry knows that a hot topic is infused beverages. So how much of the opportunity right now is in dried cannabis versus alternative types of products like edibles, infused beverages, other types of things, oils, for example, shatter, and how much is in dried cannabis? So I guess Fire and Flower, you know, from your perspective, you guys are looking at it from a retail perspective and you guys are selling different types of products. You guys have plans to expand in the future. And then I guess for the city, what is the city? What's the city's plans in the future? And then I guess for the law firm, what types of situations or problems do you guys anticipate in the coming years? So that's my question.
Thank you. And I'm curious just to expand on that question as well, if condos can regulate edibles and drinkables, for lack of a better term, and how that would work. I'm curious about that.
Yeah, so I mean, we're so early on, right, in terms of legalization, in terms of what we sell and what's available. But what I can tell you is, south of the border, Washington State, Oregon State, Colorado, as well as California, there's sales data available. Most of those states are approximately 4 years into legalization. Still at this point, and they have quite a variety of products that are available, even into the vape, kind of concentrate vape pens and all of that kind of thing. What we see is that just shy of 2/3 of their business still comes from dried flower. So it's somewhere between 60 and 65%. Edibles accounts, including beverages and capsules, accounts for approximately 15% of their overall business. Now, there could be some amount of individuals that are taking dried cannabis, processing it, and turning it into their own edibles. However, in terms of the consumer goods that aid in that process, it's very limited. So I wouldn't think that there's a huge amount of that happening. There will be some, but not a huge. So right now, based on the information that we see, again, it's still mostly dried flower. Yeah, or in the future, that's what it will be.
Subject to anything John might add, I would say that... Sure. I would say that it's not going to be enforceable to ban edibles. And the reason, and actually in our bylaws that we've been preparing, we have not been restricting edibles at all, or oils for that matter. And the main reason for that is because in order to restrict condo owners from any behavior, I think there needs to be a justification that the reason for the restriction is so that other owners aren't bothered. And I think that if people are using the oils or consuming edibles, they're really not bothering anyone else. And so it would be very hard to justify them causing a nuisance to other owners.
Yeah, this is a tricky one. I mean, up until recently, condominiums were able to restrict individuals on the basis of age, for example. And that's recently been overturned, and they've had to rewrite certain portions of the Alberta Human Rights Act. To change any set of bylaws to have prohibitions, you need 75% of the people buying in. Look, I've done this a long time. I've never seen a prohibition on alcohol, for example, or anything like that. But I'm wondering if you had 75% of the owners agreeing that that was something that they didn't want there, why that wouldn't be enforceable. Certainly there's always going to be an element of people, particularly in the cannabis scenario, where there are medical uses and the like, and I think if you tried to prohibit that, there might likely be challenges, and those still might come yet if there's prohibitions put in place. And I'm not sure there's a for sure answer on that one. I mean, there's all sorts of prohibitions that condominiums put in place, from, you know, repairing your car in any fashion in the common parking lot to all sorts of to what kind of drapes you can hang on your window. I think the answer, I don't know if it could withstand scrutiny, but I think if there was a greater, you know, enough people who wanted to ban that type of thing, that it could happen. I just don't know the answer. It's interesting, but I don't know.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Good question. Do we have another question? That was a really good one. Sam?
Question for Isaac. So So there's a moratorium from AGLC on new cannabis licenses, and I'm wondering if you could just go explain why that is and when you foresee that potentially being lifted.
Moratorium on new cannabis licenses.
Yeah, so what we've been communicated to is that due to the supply challenges and ensuring that the retailers that currently have staff members that are open, that they want to be able to provide a consistent supply over time to those existing retailers. They've communicated at this time that there's somewhere between a 6 to 18 month horizon potentially before new licenses are issued. However, it will be determined on how the licensed producers provide supply. So, you know, even it's interesting, the available supply to our locations doubled last week to this week. So it's hard for me to say. I think, you know, for our business, we're thinking that it's probably going to last several months in terms of, you know, getting, we have 5 stores that are ready to open in other parts of the province that are not open today because of this situation. But we've kind of foresee it being a few months down the road.
I don't know if you guys want to chime in on that. Yeah.
Could you elaborate more on the supply challenges that the market's currently facing and what the reasons behind those are?
I mean, I don't know if I can speak for Fire and Flower on this. I can kind of, I can talk about, you know, what I've read and kind of what I've kind of heard through certain types of conversations. Really, there's, I think with Health Canada, there's a lot of licensed producers that have grow facilities that are licensed but have not yet acquired their sales licenses. In order to get their final sales licenses, they have to go through 2 full grow cycles, which generally a grow cycle is approximately 90 days. So even until, you know, even once they get it, it's still another almost, you know, 6 months until they get that. So there's a lot of facilities across the country that will be coming online. You know, I would think in the tail end of 2019, we won't hear this conversation again. But at this time, it's just, you know, there has been some conversation about maybe Canadian product going to international markets. It gets quite a premium. However, it only represents about 2% of the overall supply. So we don't think that's the reason. So it should sort itself out. But again, it's a new industry, lots of people learning. And there still is quite a large medical market out there. So
just on your last point, one of the things I think we found in this issue that surprised me was our reporter who was on the story said that some condo boards they talked to seem to want more less restrictive bylaws in their condos due to the medical market. I'm kind of wondering if you guys have run into this with any of your clients or any discussion of medical use.
Sorry, I'm just, the question is they wish, the boards want less restrictive in terms of prohibitions on the use of cannabis as a result? I certainly haven't experienced that. I think as Sarah had indicated earlier, our experience is that a lot of the boards that we work with have used this as an opportunity to springboard to tighten up restrictions more generally as it relates to any type of smoking. And I think the medical issue is going to be different and unique in that I think those people would be in a distinct category and different than those that are just using it recreationally. So I haven't, I mean, Sarah does a lot more of the drafting the bylaws than I do, but in terms of conversations I've had with, you know, boards and property managers, that's not something I've seen. More so a focus on either prohibitions or directions and use and where it can be used and that type of thing. So not a, there haven't, and I don't know what's going to happen with the medical use, because I think there's questions I've had, and I'm not an expert in this, but about how people get certificates to be able to use medical marijuana and whether or not, you know, as to the bona fides of those and whether or not they are. And I suspect if there's going to be prohibitions, then there ultimately would be challenges and potentially human rights challenges, and that's a whole different discussion. So,
thank you. I think I saw another question. I think Robin was right before Tim. Robin? All right, Tim.
Thank you. So I hate to put people on the spot. No, I don't. I love it. So budget time, police are asking for significant amount of increased money. I believe it's something like 24 officers that they say they need to police and keep the peace because of legalized cannabis. I just want to hear your thoughts on whether that's realistic or reasonable, based on some of the things that we've been talking about. So supply isn't really where it should be and will be soon. Edibles and other things are coming. Is that a reasonable thing? Sorry, you're on the spot.
Let's start off with Deckel.
I guess it remains to be seen how cannabis is going to affect things. From October 17th to 18th, I didn't really notice much in the way of changes. You know, there's some bylaw enforcement maybe. People need to respect the fact that you can't smoke it in certain areas of parks, like playgrounds, dog off-leash areas, community gardens. But I haven't personally experienced, we're not hearing any major concerns from downtown residents. There was a fairly significant increase in police officers in the downtown division in the last couple of years. That was somewhat related to Ice District and Rogers Place opening, but part of it too is the downtown was just underserved by beat cops specifically. So we actually have beat teams out regularly all the time now. And I think most residents appreciate that. But yeah.
Yeah, when I saw the numbers, I was surprised. So I don't know. I mean, I would think that maybe it has to do with, you know, ensuring that people are driving, you know, that are not intoxicated while they're driving, and potentially more check stops or something like that. I mean, it's a tough number to swallow, I suppose. However, you know, I think it's really, really important that we support responsible use. And, it's a big number. And I think a lot of us in our business were kind of scratching our heads. I mean, we haven't really seen EPS around very much. We actually work very closely with them. We've aided in some of their training early on in terms of connecting them with certain experts. And so I think I'm still waiting to hear more about what the plans are and how they justify that request.
All right, that's a good question. We have time for one more really good question.
Is it a really good one?
All right, there we go. It's a great question.
We talked a little bit about cafes and lounges, and I'm thinking, what are the opportunities, at least from your opinion, maybe Chris, this is more of a question for you, but anybody who's open to it, to the idea that we have bars, we see markets like Amsterdam, do we see really that pull away from, you know, growing plants in houses? So more of as like a valve releasing sort of really the concerns around what's actually happening in condos and apartments. Do you guys see that as a way forward? And how does the city look towards, I guess, public policy and zoning around the idea of cafes?
So if there's concerns of people smoking in condominiums, what other outlets are there?
Yeah, I think the challenges are going to be, like I said, originally with mixed use zoning, where you have commercial main floor and residential above. We see that mostly in the urban warehouse and heritage area on 104th Street, and that's where the challenges are going to be, because some condo boards, if they have any control of those commercial bays, will probably restrict it. But there's probably going to be, you know, a lot of resistance from residents if there's any concern over odors, mostly, I think, is going to be the challenge.
You know, as we've been evaluating real estate, lounges has been kind of top of mind. You know, part of it is, you know, if we were to, we don't actually have any plans to open lounges, but if we were, you know, how do we ensure that people can kind of get to and from in a safe way? I mean, that's top of mind for us. I think then we kind of convert over and we look at, okay, who are the entrepreneurs that would open? And there seems to be this large contingent of chefs out there that want to cook with cannabis and almost do their own kind of edibles, culinary experiences, which I find really fascinating as an idea. There's not really a lot of places in the world that you can go and experience that. I don't know how they figure out dosing and how they communicate that to their customers. I think there's a massive question mark around that. I mean, I think generally edibles as a whole there is. So, I mean, we're still kind of waiting and seeing, but we find it a fascinating idea, but it has to be done responsibly. I keep restating that, but if this is going to work long term, we have to, you know, there has to be like a level of almost etiquette. There has to be like, you know, we have to think about it in the same way we think about alcohol, that there is there is norms, there's things that we teach one another, that we hold each other accountable to. So I think that's kind of what's on our mind as we think about lounges kind of going forward.
I was going to say, none of our commercial condo clients have come to us with this question yet. And it'll be interesting. John, do you have anything you want to add?
I suppose the comment's been made in terms of mixed use buildings and a couple things is the odor, firstly. And I mean, there's a few things I think on behalf of corporations. I think of that. I see another comment was a host liability potential issues in respect of that. I appreciate that might not affect the condominium necessarily. But to me, the odor is the big one. And the other thing is always a big enemy of the condominium is water. So if there's growing, that sort of thing. And one of the issues we often face and problems with condominiums is if there's, water leakage and if hydroponics are ongoing. I don't know if that would form part of a lounge per se, but that would be a concern I have. But I could just see the odor. I mean, it's in terms of the mixed use where we have lounges, where bars and things, it's typically noise. I don't know if that'll be a problem with the cannabis style, but certainly I could see, a whole host of problems if you're going to have to start designing buildings with the special HVAC needs and how that gets addressed. And I have no idea. And I don't think anybody anticipates or knows this, but that would be, I think the odor issue would be the biggest thing I could foresee.
I guess I'll just add a little bit on the grow side. I mean, I think some of it is kind of handled under C-45 at the federal level in terms of what you could do with the cannabis that you grow. So giving it to other people would be not allowed. I'll say generally, I mean, I defer to our legal counsel over here, but I think that it goes beyond simply what's happening at the city and kind of starts brushing up against federal law as well.
Cool. Well, I'd like to thank our panel. I think that's a fascinating discussion. I think there's also a lot unknown that we still have to explore as this goes forward. It's only been less than 2 months. So yeah, thank you to our panel and thanks everyone for coming out.
And thank you to Yard's publisher, Simon Yakaluk, for hosting the conversation. It's still a very new subject. 30 minutes of discussion, just scratching the surface of issues we know about so far. But I think Simon and the panel addressed some of the questions we are hearing about and mentioned others we know are coming. The panelists again, Chris Bisey, president of the Downtown Edmonton Community League, Isaac Watson, VP of Product Development and Retail Experience at Edmonton Cannabis Chain Fire and Flower, Sarah Davis and John Frame, lawyers at Witten LLP, specializing in condominium law. Thanks also to the team at The Yards for their help in this podcast partnership. The conversation continues at theyardsyeg.ca, where you can check out the new magazine and past stories. And at Downtown and Oliver Businesses, listed at theyardsyeg.ca, where you can find a copy of the magazine, published 4 times each year. Thanks for listening to this podcast, a partnership of 2 of Edmonton's local journalism publishers, The Yards and Edmonton Quotient. You can find more stories, podcasts, and community items at theyardsyeg.ca and edmontonquotient.com. I'm Jeff Sampsono. Thank you for being part of the conversation.